This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is The Big Breakdown. A long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
When the central piece of evidence in your case is a bullet casing, has more controversy around it than a pineapple on pizza, you might have a problem. Richard Allen's case hinges dramatically on one small piece of metal allegedly linking his gun to a double homicide. But the reliability of forensic ballistics is being questioned more intensely than ever before. And I'm also questioning the legitimacy of that bullet ever having those markings on it when it was put into evidence in like 2016. There's a way they might have got those markings on there. Joining us, retired FBI Special Agent Robin Dreek, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, to help dissect exactly what exactly is going on here with the bullet that has convicted Richard Allen of these murders, and to help us break down the interrogations and the jailhouse phone calls that have just recently been released from Richard Allen, which are extremely heartbreaking. Trigger warning. Robin, I know you've seen a little bit of it thus far. We're going to break some pieces down, but just the 10,000-foot overview, what has been your reaction when you got a chance to see and hear those interrogations and those phone calls?
Yeah, so the first one I watched a bit of was the accusation about and the discussion around the bullet casing and the bullet. And the first thing that struck me was Richard Allen's reaction to it. Again, you cannot, you know, statement analysis and behavioral analysis and all these things for truth and veracity is 50-50 at best with the best in the world. But I will tell you, his reaction was not the reaction of someone who was guilty. Throughout every interview and interrogation with him, throughout the accusation, the thing I'm generally looking for, and we should all look for, we all pick up on, is congruency of tempo. In other words, does your body language, does your verbals, does everything maintain the same consistency? Because they start out with a very open-ended comfort, you know, inducing baselining of asking him his name, verifying his address, doing all these things. So you're getting what his normal looks like. And then as they start escalating the discussion into other areas, you don't see a shift in him. Mm-mm. It's actually very congruent. He continues to be helpful. And then when they brought up the bullet casing, the immediate flat denial, not mine, not possible. I mean, it was boom, 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 boom. There was not like, it wasn't rehearsed. There was not a stress moment. There was not a, what do I say here moment? Because they hit it with him as a surprise and he was a surprise. So what you saw was, they hit it with him as a surprise, and did you see the surprise on his face?
Yeah.
Not a surprise. Ooh, you got me. Surprises, not mine.
Yeah.
You know, that's what struck me immediately on that one.
Everything running through his head, like, how on earth? Like, there's no way. Yeah. And we're going to get back to the bullet here in a minute. But before the bullet was even brought up, they tried to bring him in and get him to admit something that he says he did not do with the bridge guy picture, saying that the science says, I got experts saying that that's you in the picture. And the experts say it. And really trying to make him believe that there's a lot of people that are behind him being the guy in the picture, despite the only actual experts who've ever looked at the picture and have analyzed it have said it was Ron Logan. No expert has ever said that it was Richard Allen, and they can't say it to any sort of, you know, perfect scientific degree. But some of the experts who actually have looked at it have said Ron Logan, and they know that. But that, you know, eludes them. This is the very beginning. This is right when they bring him in, and they've put the pictures down, and they're saying, you know, we think it's you. Let's take a look at how that all went down in his reactions here. This is the first interrogation.
Good luck finding anything that points in that direction. I mean, it's not me. You're not going to make me believe it's me. You're not going to find anything that ties me to those murders. So I'm not really that concerned. You know, you went from trying to, I don't know what you want to say, get my trust and then slowly lure me into telling you I killed somebody and I'm not going to do it. you know, I don't know where this thing
of course. I'm not trying to give you a hard time. Really not. I just want you to put yourself in the situation where we as police officers are looking at all the evidence that we have and what you've told us right now. Okay? Okay? Not trying to give you a hard time. Just want to make sure that we get everything taken care of here. That's why we wanted to look at the things that we wanted to look at.
And that's not going to happen now. I mean, like I said, we're done here. So arrest me or take me home.
I understand.
So arrest me or take me home. I'm done.
This is stupid. Okay. So that day, on that day, you went out there on the bridge and that you were wearing the same clothing that basically the same clothing that this person here is wearing.
That's what you think. I don't know how you can tell that that's a black Carhartt coat, which is what I told you, a black or blue Carhartt coat.
I'm curious. I mean, obviously he's staying stable. His story never, ever changes.
Yeah. I got another thing to observe.
Yeah.
Too, but go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead with what your thoughts are there. Cause I have another question for you.
So in generally nonverbally too, is when you, again, these are broad swaths when you're assessing nonverbal behavior. I don't do deep dives of all the micro expressions going on, but you do broad swaths of understanding behavior, what's going on here. So here he is in a situation where the law enforcement officer is telling him he thinks it's him, and that's him in the photo. And so let's look at not just the tempo, because again, you know, Richard Allen's or Ricky, as his wife calls him, you know, body language remains very consistent, very congruent. The tempo is not changing. Look what he's doing. He's leaning in and over. In general, when you are actually the culprit and a bad guy and they're showing you something at you, get nonverbal distancing. There is no distancing he's making from that photo because it's not him. He doesn't feel it's so, see what I mean? I said, so that's what, it's another one of those little moments where he's not distancing himself physically from what he's being presented.
Yeah.
Again, nothing is ever conclusive in these things, but it's another data point that says he does not see that as him because he's not distancing himself from it. He's like, that's not me. Go.
And that's just, that's just one piece of this. And if you, anybody wants to watch the whole hour or some of this initial interview, please do so. It's on the channel. They keep going over and over. And I get there's interrogation tactics in this, but I mean, from your standpoint, I mean, at what point do you go, okay, how many times can we go over this with this guy and he's not changing? They don't seem to be receiving anything that he's giving them. They don't seem to be reacting to anything that he's giving them in an appropriate way. They just keep pounding and expecting different results. And again, you've interrogated people before in a counterintelligence area. This is local police, but what are they doing here? Are they doing this really wrong, or is this normal and how it should be done when interviewing someone of this nature?
There's a lot of, you know, I don't like criticizing anyone because I don't know what their strategy was. I don't know what they were doing. It's not the way I would do it.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I tell you, the thing that really strikes me the most, because now we're reversing optic. We're no longer thinking and putting ourselves in Richard Allen's shoes and assessing what he's in, seeing these things for the first time. Now let's put ourselves in law enforcement shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Is the behavior of the law enforcement in their interviewing and interrogating him, ask yourself this. Do you feel, because feel is an emotion that we get from observing behaviors around us, do you feel that they believe that he, like in their soul, that they personally believe he did this?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you get the feeling that they were told he did this?
I was wondering that too, because that's
I feel
big
an emotional
part.
Detachment. So if they actually believed, think about this, if they actually personally believed that he murdered two little girls, would they be able to maintain that good old boy congruent, because they haven't deviated their baseline either. Mm-hmm. They're talking to him the exact same way when they're asking about his address, to the exact same way this is you on the bridge, to the exact same way as the bullet casing, to the exact same way as these two girls are dead. They have not changed their effect either.
Mm-hmm.
So they're having a non-emotional response to everything they're doing, indicating to me that they're playing a role that they were given.
Yeah, I was thinking of that yesterday because I said, I don't know if these people truly believe that he did it, or if they're getting more frustrated because they're not going to be able to go back to whoever they need to go back to and say, look, I got what you wanted me to get.
Yeah.
Because they're not getting it. They're getting so mad and frustrated. And you can see it in another clip later where it's like they are just angry because they're not getting what they're getting. Not necessarily that Rick Allen is saying that he's innocent. It's just, damn it, my job. They're going to be mad at me because they said, go get this, and I didn't get that. That's what I'm wondering.
And seeing now as an interviewer, I'll go back to that detail you asked too. What they keep trying to lead him down the path.
Yeah.
They're not asking questions to have him explain what this is, explain what this is. Because when you're interviewing someone, what you're doing during an interrogation a lot of times is you are setting up like they did. They did a good job of establishing an initial rapport. They did a good job of inspiring him to trust them. And he was very comfortable. And then you start then having them explain away incongruencies of what they're observing, incongruencies of what they're seeing from their data points and their evidence bringing in. Well, can you help me explain then? What they said is this bullet casing was from your gun. Instead, you rephrase it as like, what do you think is the reason why they said that this bullet casing came from your gun? See what I mean? You reverse it. Instead of making it about what they think, they need to inquire about what it is he can explain away that that's being accused of. So it's reversing it. And they never did that once.
They only give him the one option of basically admit that you did this.
Yes, entire time.
And that's it. And there's no other possible explanation whatsoever. Let's take a look. This is now the second interrogation. So the first one was when they went and questioned him. The initial one actually was back when the girls died, when he raised his hand and said, how can I help? And then they sat on that for 6 years. And then all this time later, they're looking for somebody. And there's somebody up for election, too. So it'd be really helpful if we found the killer. And then they go after him. So there's the initial, way back, the second, which is more current day. And then shortly after that, they get a warrant. They search his house. They take his gun, although keep in mind there was no gun used in this crime. But I get you're searching for you're looking into a murder suspect. You're going to take weapons. And they take his gun out of his house. And then we get back to the second interview, and suddenly there's bullet and evidence here. There's this ballistic evidence that a bullet was found at the scene. And I believe there probably was. I think it'd be kind of hard to trace all the way back to the initial murders or fake that this thing was in evidence all that time. But they're saying it came from his gun. How interesting, because that's never been brought up before. Here's more of that.
I don't want to be included to begin with. So until the point that you have something that tells you that I did this and you want a subpoena or arrest me or something, I've got nothing to worry about. So I'm not real concerned here, but your attitudes towards me have definitely changed, and I don't like the fact that, you know, it feels more like I'm being interrogated. And so then you're going to tell me that you've already talked to my wife and my daughter and stuff. Like, how straightforward is that? You know?
Here's more on the bullet. This here is the second.
There's no way possible.
There is no way possible
that a round from my gun ended up at a murder scene. It's not possible. So something's obviously wrong.
Something is wrong.
Exactly.
You and I both know what's wrong.
I didn't do it. And I'm not going to sit here all day trying to convince you that I didn't do it. No. You obviously think that I did.
I'm not going to sit here all day and convince you that I think that you did do it, Rick. I'm just laying down some of the evidence that we have.
Okay.
And we're going to get more.
I don't think so.
We're only giving you the opportunity to get out in front of this. This is your opportunity. Like you said earlier, the truth is easy.
I've got nothing to get out in front of. I'm not going to tell you I did something I didn't do.
Okay.
And
I don't want you to tell me something that you didn't do.
Then stop asking me to.
I'm not. I'm just asking you to tell the truth about this day. I asked you to go back and rehash it and you wouldn't. Why?
I told you because I'm not going to. You guys are like trying to trick me into doing something.
I'm not trying to trick you.
I told you what happened. You've already got it. There's no need for me to tell you again.
Story.
Whatever. There aren't any. I don't know how I can make this any clearer. I'm not going to tell you that I had something to do with this.
Again, leaning in there.
So not just that, but first of all, people that have, in general, people that have done something wrong and that are being accused of it and they've actually done it and are trying to lie about it, you generally typically see panic responses of rapid excuses, rapid this, you know, changing the subject. I mean, you see a lot of different behaviors of stress being induced because when you're being accused and you know you've done it, you have stress responses in your brain and it leaks out of you verbally, non-verbally. You're not seeing any of that. You're seeing exasperation with him, which is congruent with some veracity here. The other thing too is notice when I don't generally do a lot of nonverbal assessments, but he's so dramatic with this. He is saying, I didn't do it. And now he's not saying it like this with high compression, open. He's, in other words, anything that's up and out, palms up, ventral displays, all the body language is up and out, says I have high comfort with the things I'm saying. And as he's saying, I didn't do it, high comfort, saying that, in other words, we have very good congruence between the words he's saying and the emotions he's feeling as he's saying it. That's why we believe him, because there's congruency, because they are just exhausting him. And that's why so think about this. If you're a bad guy, you've done something wrong and they keep poking at you, you're thinking, oh, they're not believing me. I have to give them a better story. Oh, mm-hmm. They're still not believing me. I got to try this story. Let me try this angle. He's not doing that because there's nothing else to tell. Mm-hmm. He didn't do it. See what I mean? He's not inventing anything because there's nothing to invent around a liar or fictitian. Ugh.
The tactics that they're using in this round, and we're going to watch another clip here where his wife gets tactics. Involved. No tactics. I don't even know what's going because it's so... I know in this country they can make things up, right? I mean, there doesn't seem to be any laws that prevent it because they're telling him that the experts are saying this and the experts are, and we have witnesses and we got this and we got that and many things that they don't have and they never produced in court.
Groupthink and social proof is what they're trying to use to convince him to confess to something.
But they're making it up. And I know that they can do that here, but I know I've talked to other folks and I know our listeners and viewers in other countries are always kind of enamored with the way that we interview people or interrogate them because there's laws over in the UK and such where you can't lie to the person you're interrogating. You can't tell them things that are not true that you don't actually have evidence of to try and get them or elicit a response. But they do a lot of that here and they go to his wife and they convince her that this science of this bullet is, you know, bulletproof, pardon the pun, and there's no room for conjecture or anything, when in reality, there's a ton of room for this. There's so many problems with this sort of science. And then they talk to neighbors, and they pressure him, and how is that going to elicit any sort of confession from someone who didn't do it?
I don't know. It's nothing I've ever done. I've never, you know, Now, Tony, here's what typically will happen. I'll try to bring out a prop for you for this.
Okay.
So typically...
Puppets? Are you going to do a puppet show?
Yes. I don't think I was ever allowed to do, you know, I didn't rely on that kind of stuff because generally if I'm going to interview a subject and do a subject interview, I actually know they're guilty.
Yeah.
Because I have all the data points. I'm not trying to see if you're guilty. I actually know you're guilty.
Sure.
So generally what you'll do is... You know, imagine this is a file. If anyone saw the movie The Matrix, you know, Mr. Smith does it to Neo at the very beginning. So we have a very large file on you, Mr. Neo. You know, so what happens is you can use props and you can insinuate. In other words, I can insinuate, you know, like this. Imagine this is like, you know, 3 inches thick.
Sure.
I got a lot of data. I got a lot of evidence talking about the bullet casing. So why don't you tell me in your words what you think is in this file? See what I mean? So in other words, you can use props and insinuate without actually telling untruths. And that way you put it on him.
Yeah.
And then what you should do is you're listening to words he says, and then you go back at a different angle. You ask the same question differently. And then you say, well, I heard that it could be potentially this. Would you be able to explain that away to me? And how does that – so see what I mean? You keep poking at the same thing from different angles to see if he's consistent with the way he explains it. Because if it's a lie, the likelihood of consistency – won't be there.
Yeah.
It'll be all over the place because we have a very, very hard time remembering untruths. And then when you link it to other events that happen later on, it all falls apart. And then that's what you do as an interview and interrogator, say, well, can you help me understand why you said this here, but it doesn't match what you said here.
Did now, these guys
we
like
go further explain? So it that's
feels
what
like
we do.
It feels like the investigators here don't even know what to be looking for.
They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, we're going to be hard, and that's it, and be like, hopefully we get what we want.
I look at their age. They seem to be seasoned. You know, they've done this a bunch of times. That's why the way they're doing this, they either have never done an interview of this caliber before, because they have nice conversation skills. I think they're great conversationalists, but they haven't done this type.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, though, to me, it still looks like they were told, go get this from this guy.
Yeah.
And they didn't necessarily believe it themselves, but they're told to get it. So when you don't believe in what you're doing and you know the evidence isn't there, you got to make shit up, man.
And my question about that is, who's telling him to do that and why?
Yep.
And is that just because they don't want to look bad? They don't want to look like they're incompetent. So go get whatever. I mean, is this just covering for incompetency or lack of good investigation? Because obviously we know the history. There's so many other people that look pretty damning in this, and just go get it. We got to get this done. What's the motivation there for telling them to go do that? That is my big question, because that's going to tell us a lot, whether it's about ego and this just totally went off the rails, or if this is covering for something else. And that's what I'm wondering.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
We're now going to take a listen to the jailhouse phone calls, because ultimately what they wanted here was a confession from Richard Allen, which he did not give them.
Yeah.
And they have run out of other people to go after. The guy who's really points to is dead. The other guy who it really points to, where he was communicating with one of the girls the day, one of the last people known to actually have communicated with them, a known child predator who is away in prison now for that very crime, but unrelated to this case, and planned to meet one of the girls by the property of Ron Logan, Keegan Klein. He has nothing to do with it, according to the investigators, but this guy does. This guy does. And they got him in prison now, not jail, waiting trial, prison, solitary confinement. For about 14 months, his attorneys have testified to not having adequate access to even work with him, having to talk through like the bar in the door, no place where they could sit down and have a conversation with their client for the rights that he's entitled to. And this is what you end up getting. We are going to start listening to Richard Allen in a state before he's totally broken. And we're going to hear these confessions that so many hang their hats on in this case, that so many have hung their hats on before ever being to audibly hear them. If you weren't in that courtroom, you have not heard these phone calls, unless you've already heard them since watching this. But these are brand new. And have an open mind here. If you think, well, he confessed, context is very important here. So this is early on. This is Richard Allen, I think, realizing he's in a corner for something he did not do, but all he wants is for the best of his family. Let's take a listen to this. It's not
I
a video.
I don't know how to explain something that...
I'm sorry, it's this one right here. Possible? Let's take a listen to this.
You just know that if anything happens, I see you in the next life. I swear I will, okay? Okay. You take care of the family for me. I love you all.
I love you too, sweetheart.
Okay. Bye-bye. It's good to hear your voice.
I love you too.
Okay. It's good to cut us off here.
Okay. Love you. Okay.
I love you.
I love you, honey.
I love you. I'll hold on.
Thank you for using GTL. This is a prepaid debit call from...
Ricky.
Hey.
Hello.
Good morning.
I want to stop there. That's when he's talking to his mom. But that initial one was him talking with his wife and take care of the kids, take care of the family for me. He really felt trapped. I want to see if this is the other part.
I love you too much.
Yeah.
And every time I talk to you, I feel like it's going to be the last time I get to talk to you.
I know. I wish I could hug you.
I can't explain what's been going on.
No.
I don't want you to worry about me.
Yeah.
I'm a man, and I'll take care of myself. But I'm worried about you. And all I do is worry about you. So, and you let everybody else know I can much I love them all you.
You can hang in there, honey, okay?
Huh?
You need to just hang in there because they're going to get you an attorney soon, okay?
Will you just let everybody know how much I love them?
Of course I will. They already know, hon.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
Nobody loves me anymore.
Stop. That's not true.
I know. I'm sorry.
Not true. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I know what you told me. I know what you told me, and I believe you.
Yes.
I just, knowing I'm never going to see you again, or at least it feels that way. I'm just saying, if it gets too hard, just tell them to cut me, get me, and bring me to see you, and I'll tell them whatever they want me to say.
No.
I don't need you to try and be strong for me. You need to be weak. You need to be held. You take care of yourself, okay?
That's...
Yeah, he's broken at this point.
Yeah, he can't explain what's going on. And you can hear it genuinely in his voice because he doesn't know what the hell's going on. What is going on here? I mean, it would blow your mind that like this could even happen in this country, especially. Mm-hmm. And saying if it's too hard, I'll tell them whatever they want to hear.
Whatever they want to hear.
So
yeah.
You're okay. Which is ultimately what those officers wanted. And those they wanted to hear specifically. And hey, if we put him into solitary confinement and don't tell his attorneys and give no way to object, we're just going to put him there for 14 mm-hmm. months. Oh, you'll get what you want to hear. Not make that it's real, mm-hmm. but you'll get what you want to hear. And it seems that they knew that little tactic. Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder how many other people they've done this to as well.
Sure.
Yeah. What a horribly horrible place to put a man that you don't have, is not yet even convicted of a crime. I mean, what did you feel out of that?
Yeah, I took meticulous notes during the trial on particularly everything related to his mental health and the confessions. Notes here that I'm looking at, October 22nd, arrest in solitary confinement, no symptoms of psychosis. March 23, the symptoms of psychosis began. Solitary confinement, lights on 24/7. And even though he was becoming bizarre, he converted to Christianity and started a lot of religious mumbo jumbo, mm-hmm. Clearly beginning to look psychotic and break down. And the psychologist at the prison, who I think was inadequate at best and possibly worse, noted that he was faking and didn't believe him. And then he just became progressively psychotic, terribly ill, and the confessions continued. So,
yeah, we're going to listen to some of those confessions. Yeah, he's faking.
Yeah.
Where did she get her degree? Like, I'm curious, what studies have you done? Like, who have you studied under? Like, what's your experience in this to think that that is not
right
authentic? Here's another call.
It's like, I feel like I've lost my mind.
This is where, different tone.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of living it right now. It's not a good place to be in. Not a good place at all. and I don't have much say in anything. Sure.
But you know that I've done it right.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that. Okay. I'm going to have a good conversation between us. No, just don't. I guess it doesn't matter what I think, but.
Of course it does. Just in a really frustrating spot right now.
Mm-hmm.
I said I'm just in a really frustrating spot right now. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's nothing compared to where you're at. So no. I'm not trying to.
No. No, your side is a lot worse than mine. I have freedoms that you don't have. So nothing good there. I feel guilty about that.
I don't know why anybody will talk to me and be honest with me. I don't feel like anybody's willing to be honest with me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody's afraid to hurt my feelings or something.
I think people have to be very careful when they talk. We all do.
Yeah.
Of course, nobody ever answers. You have to go to voicemail. Right now. But your soul doesn't need to be.
You're almost hearing it in her voice, like a sense of desperation here of, you know, it doesn't really matter what I think. I know she said that in there. I mean, the torture that she must be going through, having to contemplate, well, they're telling me like this is, you know, solid evidence against him. And how did that bullet get there? I mean, how does one cope with that? It was someone in her position.
Incredible desperation and stress for someone like that. And I, you know, there are things that are just unimaginable. And I don't think we have a coping strategy book for how do you get through the unimaginable other than you hang with your people, right? The people that share your heart and your concerns and your thoughts. You need other people. And that's what I see him, you know, the desperation on his end, wanting to know if people still love him and so concerned that people don't love him. That's what we do. That's how we get through the hard times is those heart-to-heart connections.
Because to him, it feels like sanity has left him. I mean, everything has left him. He's being in this position for a crime he did not commit. And the world seems to be, in his perspective, from what he's seeing and experiencing, is just the opposite. I mean, it's totally bizarre.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Welcome back as we continue to break down the newly released audio and video in the case of Richard Allen, the man that's been convicted in the Delphi murders case. And I firmly believe wrongly convicted. And I think if anyone really looks at the evidence, you're going to see it that way too. It's one of the largest cases, I think, of alleged police misconduct, fraud that I've ever seen. With little to no accountability on any of it yet. Just accepting things as are. They got the guy that they think did these things. And if they keep saying it loud enough, they'll believe it. Let this, you know, he be damned. If you're just joining us, we've now put out the two reviews and breakdowns of the police interrogations of Richard Allen, the initial one and then the second one where they inevitably arrested him. Those are, if you're wanting to do this in context from start to finish, go start at the first interview, get to the second interview, then it'll take us here. These are some of the jailhouse phone calls that have been released now. Crime Circus is the channel that got them. So I want to give them credit. It's quite a psychological trip, if you will. We're going to go through several of these. You're probably going to break it into a few segments. We'll just kind of see how far we get on each one because we'll be talking, and I want to see your comments as well, what your thoughts are on these jailhouse calls. So please do comment if you're watching us on YouTube. If you're listening to us on the podcast, check out our YouTube channel when you get a chance. It's just Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. And you can there also comment and all this stuff and watch what we're doing here in studio now. And people are going, who is this over here? There's an animal on screen. This is Belle. This is our dog, Belle. She is a mini golden doodle. And I call her Baby Belle because she's only 6 months old. And if you watch The Righteous Gemstones, it's really fun to say Baby Belle's Bible stories or Bible bonkers, Baby Belle's Bible bonkers, right? You know, if you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know in the comments. Okay. And she's also here for like, I don't want to say comedic relief, but you know, we talk about some pretty dark stuff on this show, and she's always here in the studio with me. Why don't you sit back on your chair, honey? And she's usually just sitting over there. And she comes up and she, you know, gets my leg and stuff when we're, you know, talking and, you know, hey, you know, pet me, pick me up. I just thought, you know, why don't we just bring her on camera? Because with all the dark things that we're examining all the time, it's kind of nice to just be able to look over and see a puppy. it's like an emotional support, you know, animal in a certain way for all of us. And she's so damn cute. So, even in the darkest moments that we share and hear on this show, we're going to try and have her on with us as much as we can. You like that? Can we do that? Does that sound good? You shake? She doesn't shake. I haven't really taught her anything. She's still kind of working on making it out the door to go, number two. She's got pretty good on one. But that's where we're at. Okay, let's go here into the phone calls. This is going to be in order. This first one, November 14th of 2022, and these are going to be where we're going to hear the false confessions after being in solitary confinement and basically losing your mind. He's eating poop around this time. Mm-hmm. And running headfirst into walls. You know, like the guy we saw earlier would do. Or not at all. Notice the similarity and difference in his voice.
Inmate at the Indiana Department of Corrections, West Knoll Correctional Facility.
Hey, are you there?
Hey, yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, hon. I'm trying to keep this together.
Yeah, hold on.
I don't want to upset you anymore. All I want to do is be able to help you. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I'm not saying anything, but if it gets to a point that it's too much, you just need to call the investigators and tell them to come and get me and bring me to you, and I'll tell them whatever they want me to tell them, because whatever it is they want me to say, I'll just say it. So I want to be able to make this dance with you. And for everybody else, it's certainly because of this. I love you too much. And every time I talk to you, I feel like it's going to be the last time I get to. talk to you.
I know. I wish I could hug you.
I can't explain what's been going on.
No.
I don't want you to worry about me.
Yeah.
I'm a man, and I'll take care of myself. But I'm worried about you. And that's all I do is worry about you. So, and you let everybody else know. I could much rather love them with you.
You need to hang in there, honey, okay?
Huh?
You need to just hang in there, because they're going to get you an attorney soon, okay?
Will you just let everybody know how much I love?
Of course I will. They already know, hon.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
Nobody loves me anymore.
Stop. That's not true.
I know. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I know what you told me. I know what you told me, and I believe you.
Yes.
I just, knowing I'm never going to see you again, or at least it feels that way. I'm just saying, I think it's too hard. Just tell them to cut and get me and bring me to see you, and I'll tell them whatever they want me to say.
Yeah. No. Okay.
You need to be weak. You need to be held. You take care of yourself, okay? But you need to get the help you need. I can't hug you. I can't tell you anything that's going to make you feel better. So please just make sure if you need mom or Brett or anybody that you're going to them, don't wait.
Okay.
Did you go back to work?
No.
Okay.
They don't want me there.
They don't?
They're afraid for me.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. Wait for themselves, so.
Okay.
Just do the best
I understand.
Can.
Yeah. I'm sorry, baby.
You have 1 minute remaining.
I'm sorry, baby. Just one more thing. I fucked up for you. I just love you so much, babe.
I love you too, baby.
Okay. I'm not going to keep calling.
No.
I wish I could see you, babe. You don't know that I'd get to see you just one more time. Because I don't know that I'm going to. You just know that if anything happens, I see you in the next lifetime. I swear I will, okay?
Okay.
You take care of the family for me. I love you all.
I love you too, sweetheart.
Okay. Bye-bye. It's good to hear your voice.
I love you too.
Okay. It's going to cut us off here.
Okay. Okay. I love you. Okay.
I love you.
I love you, honey.
I love you. I'll hold on.
Thank you for using GTL. This is...
Are you proud of yourself, Delphi? Are you proud of yourself? Talking to you. Talking to everybody on your ragtag Keystone Cop police force. Everybody that was involved in railroading this man. Are you proud of yourself? Are you happy with yourself? Do you think you did the right thing? Because if you have an inch of humanity in you and you heard that, you heard a man who was being tortured, innocent until proven guilty. And before he started saying, I did it, I did it, I think I did it, he said that before they completely broke him. He said, I'll say whatever to protect you. And he then started doing that. Because he's a guy of his word, because that's exactly what he was from the beginning. When he raised his hand and said, hey, I was there, how can I help? And yet, the disgusting swine that infest the Delphi police force and court system. Or as the investigator on the other video, snakes. Do you like snakes, Rick? I don't like snakes. I'd probably shoot them all. You got to go back to that other video to see that. So these are going to be heartbreaking, I'm going to guess. And that's just call one. Some of these are a little shorter than others. Some are a little bit longer. So we'll just kind of play it by ear as far as how long we do a segment. Let's do another one. Yeah. Puppy. We have a puppy. Look at the puppy when you're feeling sad. Or just feel it and know that you're a human being and you have empathy. These people who put him away, they don't have it. Can you imagine a life without it? How devoid that must be of experiencing the best parts of life. Worst parts of life, if everything is just kind of eh. You can't feel the connection with another human being because you don't have that empathy. You look at a lot of those people and you go, these are monsters. And, you know, when used incorrectly, it certainly can be. But not all people like that are monsters. You know, there's some that just really live a sad life. And you got to feel bad for that. But one of the monsters that put him away, and I'm not saying it was the jury. I'm saying it's the railroading of Richard Allen. Everyone behind that. I'm sure a few of them have the empathy. And I hope that after seeing the broader spectrum of everything, which many may not have, you gotta think there's probably groups, just probably not a very wide group, honestly. I think some people may really be believing that they're doing their job correctly. That I don't know what investigator that was in one of our previous videos that was going nuts at the end. If maybe the evidence that was shown to him said this and he had nothing to do with anything, maybe. Maybe he was just, he's not a very good interrogator, I'll give him that. I think there's plenty of people in this that think they are doing the right thing. I do think that does exist because they are believing the people that they trust. And we can all be in situations with people that we think we trust, and then you learn later, oh my God, maybe not so much. It's about being aware of that, though. But I do think there's something going on here. Let's go to that next call and keep listening.
This is a prepaid debit call from...
Ricky.
Hey.
Hello? Hello?
Good morning.
Yeah,
How are
you?
Good to hear from you.
Yeah. Been trying to get a hold of Kathy all morning, but this stupid phone system doesn't seem to be working right about half the time.
It cut us off, yes, the other, I mean, yes, Friday, didn't it?
I mean, Friday. Yeah, I'm sure it did. I got a hold of her once today, and then it cut us off before I had a chance to really talk to her, and I haven't been able to get her back since, so.
Okay.
I was just curious to see if it would let me through to you, so that's good.
They had a lot of real bad storms.
Oh, and that fire.
In all of Indiana.
I just want to note to anybody listening that Echo is not us. It's the actual audio from the source. So let's keep listening.
All of Indiana. There was tornadoes and everything.
I thought I heard something about tornadoes. I know we had a little bit of hail at one point, but.
They may not have internet or anything here.
You still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, if you talk to Kathy today and I haven't yet, just tell her I'm okay, and I'll talk to her as soon as I'm able to get through to her.
Oh, okay, I will.
Hey, are you you going to church today?
Yeah.
Good. Where are you going to church at? I didn't even know you were.
It's Story Church. It's there at the Rock State Theater in Peru.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Why there? What made you decide to go there?
Colleen, my friend. She started going after I wrecked the van.
When did you wreck the van?
It was in February of last year.
Oh my God, you've been going to church that long?
Well, I've been going I'd say since last summer.
How did I not know you were going to church?
Well, I just started going, and then I decided I needed to get back with God again. And I figured he's been sparing my life for a reason all these years.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. And I'm glad that I did, because I wouldn't have made it through all this without you.
Yeah. So, did Kathy tell you that I told her the other day that I accepted the Lord Jesus Christ as my Savior?
Oh no, that's so wonderful.
I didn't know. She told you or not, but God's really important to me right now. To hear you say that you've been going to church for that long again just makes me happy.
It makes me happy. And that Kathy's going and all that.
Okay, well, I could go on all day, but I'm going to try to get a hold of Kathy again, and if not, then I'm going to fall asleep at some point because I haven't slept. So,
now,
this is a Clown Circus presentation.
Hopefully I can get a hold of her before I fall asleep, but if not, I know that I've talked to you and that you'll let her know that I'm okay now.
I will.
I will.
I've got a family that's always going to love me no matter what. And
yes, you
and
do.
I've got God, so. And I know that Kathy's got God and you've got God. And
yeah.
That's good enough for me, so.
Yeah.
I know that he is not going to let this last forever. And
no, he's not.
We're all going
to
be back together eventually. Yeah. He'll make that happen. It may be today. It may be tomorrow. It may be 6 months from now. It may be when we're together again in heaven, but it's going to happen. And
I just think God's going to work a miracle through all this.
Yeah, I think he already has. I mean, Kathy sent me a Bible. I didn't accept God into my life until March 21st of 2023. So that's a week ago, week and a half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I never would have done it if I hadn't started reading the Bible. And I wouldn't have read the Bible if Kathy hadn't sent it to me. And
she's been trying for a long time to get one to you.
And I questioned, you know, when I called her and tried to tell her that I had accepted God, I struggled to know if it was really this Bible and if this was actually a Bible, because I don't know if you know this or not, but the Bible that she got me doesn't even say the Holy Bible on it, on the front.
Yeah, but it's just worded so you could understand it better.
Sure, sure. I didn't know if you knew that. And just on the front, it says the message. So after I accepted God into my life or accepted Jesus Christ as my Savior and got into my life and told Kathy that, she told me that first she had to convince me that I was actually reading the Bible.
Yeah.
And then I asked her where she got the Bible from, and she said that Dr. Frank had given it to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so today I was calling her because I wanted to make sure that the next time she saw Dr. Frank, I wanted her to thank Dr. Frank for saving my life.
Oh.
By giving her a Bible.
Yes.
Because otherwise, I probably wouldn't have a Bible today.
Yeah. Yeah. She had been trying to
see if
one of the lawyers could get one to you and Matt. But she really wanted you to have the one she'd been raining.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go now and try to get hold of Kathy. And if not, hopefully I can get a hold of her tonight, because I'm probably going to fall asleep at some point.
Okay. I love you.
I love you too, Mom. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye. Mm-hmm. Bye.
The echo there was, like I said, part of how the audio came out. So we heard the first call from Richard and his wife, Kathy. And that was him and his mom. Again, seemed like the guy who killed the kids, especially when stacked to the other folks that have far more likelihood to be involved than this guy? Tell me in the comments what you think. We got more jailhouse calls coming up, so press subscribe wherever you are listening. If you're on the podcast platforms, if you're on YouTube, hit subscribe, ding the bell, whatever you need to do. Ring the bell, ring the bell. Is the bell still a thing? I don't even know. Anyway, just subscribe so you don't miss anything we're talking about. And please do let us know in the comments. Always like looking at those. So we got more coming up. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Want true crime coverage all day, every day? Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today and get the latest cases delivered right to your feed.